Welcome to Earth Matters, environmental justice stories from so-called Australia and around the world. Produced at the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri Woiwurrung country in Naarm, Melbourne, and broadcast across the continent via the Community Radio Network. I pay my respects to elders past and present of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung and of the many lands our content reaches. I recognise that sovereignty has never been ceded. This always was and always will be Wurundjeri Woiwurrung land. And I affirm that there can be no environmental justice without justice for First Nations people across the globe. I'm Mia Audrey.
It's really important to give young people a sense of opportunity and agency and empowerment rather than having them feel as if they're kind of consigned to a future that's already been written for them.
Talking about climate change is hard. And for those of us who work, live or spend time with young people, it can be especially difficult to work out how to balance the harsh realities of present and future impacts, communicate accurately about what can be done, and respond to the feelings that come up for us and for the kids we care about. Today, I bring you interviews with two climate advocates who are using their talents to help kids and their carers grapple with the climate crisis. Tim Winton, whose latest book shares his love of the Ningaloo Reef with young people, and Dr. Lyndon Ashcroft, a senior lecturer in climate science and science communication at Melbourne University, whose recent video series Climate Kids answers children's questions about climate change and its impacts. First up, here's Dr. Ashcroft, sharing what she's learnt about the sticky but unavoidable challenge of talking to kids about their future. Dr. Ashcroft, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Earlier this year, you and Dr. Lily O'Neill launched the first season of Climate Kids with 5 episodes answering kids' questions about climate change. It's a really exciting project, and I'm curious about the process of collecting kids' questions and particularly if there's anything that surprised you about what kids had to say on this.
Climate Kids was an idea from Dr. Lily. Lily is a lawyer and she didn't know the answers to her kids' questions. She's got two young boys and they were coming to her with questions about climate change. They live in regional Victoria and her eldest son in particular was, you know, peppering her with queries about bushfires and whether things were going to get worse in the future. Lily was looking for resources that she could use to help answer her son's question, but she couldn't find any. And so she decided to make some, you know, using the expertise that exists across the University of Melbourne. She pulled that together and developed this series that her and I star in, this YouTube video series. The episodes are, you know, about as long as an episode of Bluey. Coming back to your question, the kids' questions are pretty amazing because they're not afraid to ask the big questions, you know, the scary ones and the ones that you may not have thought of. One of the questions was about whether ships are good for the earth or not. Mm. You know, she's had a lot of questions about what is going to happen in snow, what's going to happen to snow in the future. And of course, you know, so I teach atmospheric science. One of the great questions we got was about tornadoes, whether we could use the wind from tornadoes as an energy source.
Amazing.
Kids are full of amazing ideas and big questions, and we owe it to them to try to answer those questions with heart and with truth.
Absolutely. And one of the things I appreciate so much about kids is how often they express a thought, however silly, that has crossed your mind too, but you don't feel like you have the space to say it. So it's really fun that came up for you along the way as well, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But of course, it is a difficult topic to talk about with people of any age. Obviously, there's particular challenges when speaking with kids about this topic, about the future of the planet. It's their future. How did you approach communicating about something as complex and scary as climate change can be with young people?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And it's a question that we ask ourselves a lot, because you're right. You know, we don't want to scare kids and we don't want to contribute to the feeling of hopelessness and anxiety that seems to be everywhere at the moment. You know, we hear about mental health issues being at their highest rates ever. People are saying social media is to blame for that, but there are other researchers that suggest, no, it's climate change. You know, kids are looking at a future that is objectively worse than their present. And that's really heartbreaking. But for us, look, we came down on the side of knowledge is power. And we also feel that kids are being exposed to this stuff. Kids are asking questions about these things regardless. It's happening. Climate change is happening. Climate change is in the world. We want to equip these kids with knowledge and also a clear path to action. So the series is written in such a way that Lily introduces the show. She introduces a kid's question, and then her and I kind of answer it with animations and videos. And I play the role of a roving reporter from the future. I get to wear a boiler suit and I've got my hair in pigtails because my sleeves are rolled up and I'm getting the job done. And I report from a future that is a bright future, a climate positive future, where we've addressed the worst issues of climate change. We're working as a community. We've transitioned to 100% renewable energy. And while there are some changes, things are looking good and things are looking bright. So we have that hope. And we also have clear action items that at the end of every episode, you know, here's what you can do about this issue. You could learn to sail. Sailing is going to be a big part of the future if we stop using, you know, coal and gas-powered boats. You could tell your grandma and grandpa to stop buying your new toys and to buy stuff from the op shop instead. You can write a letter to the prime minister and say it's your future, not his future, and he needs to do more about it. But we also increasingly, and we're very aware of this, Lily and I both having young children as well, we make sure there's just the right amount of fart jokes because we know that humour... Humor's important, right? Humor's important when communicating this stuff to grown-ups or kids. And so that's really what we try to do. I think sticking our heads in the sand or trying to pretend to our children that this isn't happening is not going to serve them in the long run. Yes, there's an element of protection there, but they can handle knowledge, I believe. And so that's what we try to give to them in a way that's hopeful and has a clear path to action.
Yeah, wonderful. And I do appreciate the hopeful and constructive tone. It does have a light tone here and there along the way, these videos. I think that's important when we're communicating about climate change. But I also had the thought, watching you in this role of the time traveler in the future, in a kind of hopeful image of the future, it must have been emotional at points as well, because it can be emotional even to think of how things could be if we get our act together, because you can reckon with how far we are from that reality. So how was that for you? Did you have much of an emotional journey inhabiting that role? Did that inform how the videos were produced for you?
Yeah, it did actually. Some of the questions in particular really hit hard. You know, as I said, Lily lives up in regional Victoria near the snowfields, and a lot of the questions from the kids that she got were about snow. You know, what's the snow going to be like when I'm a grown up? You know, are we going to get less snow in the future? And there's a pretty clear answer for that, right? Yes. Things are looking bad. Things are looking bad in lots of different areas. And we're still working through emotionally how we feel about answering some of these questions. For me, I have to do something, right? I want to make a difference. I want to contribute using my skill sets and my knowledge. This is something that I can do. And answering the questions is hard, but pretending that it's not happening is also not
fair. It's even harder.
It's even harder. That's right.
Yeah, I think you get to something that's so useful about this project, which is you are equipping parents and educators with more of a script for the moments that those questions come up, that those feelings come up. And that's so helpful. But it's also true that in the moment when those conversations are happening, the script crumbles often, doesn't it? And you get thrown a curveball question or a feeling comes up, words come up that you haven't prepared for. Do you have any advice for parents or educators who are finding it difficult to imagine their emotions as they speak with kids about climate change?
I think honesty would be my main piece of advice. Honesty with yourself and honesty with the kids. You know, kids are excellent at detecting bullshit.
They see right through us.
They see right through us, you know, and it's okay to say to kids, geez, that's a good question. I've got no idea. Or, geez, that question feels a bit scary. Like, let's look it up together. Honestly, I don't know. How do you feel about it? You know, one of the things about climate change communication and climate change action in Australia and around the world is that a lot of people feel they're doing it on their own. If you ask Australians, do you care about climate change and do you think we should have more action? Over 70% of Australians say yes. But if you ask those same people, what do you think other people think? Fewer than half of us think that other people care. Do you know what I mean?
We're
And
feeling pretty
so,
lonely.
exactly, we're feeling pretty lonely. And if you can remind yourself and your family and your kids that you're not alone, that you're figuring this out together, that it is a big topic, that it is a complicated topic, and that there's lots of different things you can do, using the skill sets that you have available to you. Another resource I could really strongly recommend is something called the Climate Superpowers Quiz. It helps you think about areas that you're good at, things that you like to do, and then it can tailor. It's a fun online quiz you can do, and at the end, it tells you what your climate superpower is. Are you someone that likes organizing people? Are you someone that's got really good creative skills? Are you someone that can, champion an underdog? All these different things, and then there's some really clear action items that you can do. I really love that because some people think, "Oh, I'm not a scientist, or I'm not a, I don't know, I'm not a greenie. I can't act on climate change." But no, like looking after the planet is everybody's responsibility, and no matter what skills you have, no matter what passion you have, there's a role for you. And I think that resource is a really useful tool for younger people to figure out how they can make a difference. I sometimes feel quite despondent thinking I could do all of the personal individual actions, I could get my whole family to do all of those things, I could empower. You know, sometimes I do feel like telling these kids to do stuff, oh, it's not really going to make a difference, is it? Oh, I don't know. But I'm more and more convinced now, reading the literature about societal change, reading the literature about mental health, you know, motivation and action leading to hope, the power of hope, that individual actions have a role to play in the big picture and also your own sustainability, right? Climate change is a marathon. We're going to be talking about climate change my whole life. And I'm no use to anyone. My kids are no use to anyone. No one's good use to anyone if we fall in a hole of despair. And so I suppose my advice, coming back to your question, would be to be honest with yourself and honest with your kids about what you know and what you don't know and what you're feeling and what they're feeling, because then you can feel like you're not alone.
Yeah, you can feel connected in that space for sure. Well, it is important work you're doing, and I want to express my personal appreciation as someone who works with young people myself. Thank you so much for the work, and also thanks so much for joining me on Earth Matters.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Lyndon Ashcroft of Melbourne University on the importance of being honest with kids about climate change and our feelings about it. You're listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environmental Justice Program. We're hearing about the difficult and crucial work of climate communication with young people. Next up, Tim Winton, renowned author and recognised living treasure, shares about his new picture book, Ningaloo, Australia's Wild Wonder, and his love for the region it captures. Thank you so much for speaking with me.
Oh, no, it's a pleasure.
Now, Ningaloo, Australia's Wild Wonder is your first picture book in over 20 years. How did it feel to write one again after so long, especially about something that's so close to your heart?
Well, it's a bit like getting on back on the bike, I suppose. But no, it was a great opportunity, really, and it seemed like the right time. I've been studying Ningaloo and visiting it and defending it for so long, and I guess, you know, also recently I put in the 3 years or so making the documentary series for the ABC, and so I guess there was, you know, all that sort of up-to-date information available, and I just thought it'd be great to be able to somehow condense that and present it to younger people as a resource and an inspiration to celebrate the, you know, the marvel that that we have, but also to deepen young people's understanding of what's there and how things are related to to one another, mm-hmm. But also to give them a sense of agency about and knowledge about how it came to be the way it is. So some of the natural history is about how the place was formed and how the ecosystems work, and some of the social history element is why Ningaloo is still intact, and it's intact for a good reason, and that's that people did the hard work to learn about it and to defend it and to protect mm-hmm. it against exploitation and mm-hmm. And development and changed government policy. I think it's really important to give young people a sense of opportunity and agency and empowerment rather than having them feel as if they're kind of consigned to a future that's already been written for them.
Absolutely.
It's important for young people to know that they can make a difference, that they, if they foster solidarity, if they get hold of good, clean information, that they can change the course of history.
Mm.
And that's certainly been my experience at Ningaloo. Ningaloo is still there, and it's still, one of Australia's great and one of the world's great places because people defended it. There's no, governments didn't somehow, off their own bat, governments and corporations didn't think, you know what, we should do the right thing and we should look after this place.
Mm.
The fact is that, only two generations ago, Ningaloo was supposed to be an oil field,
Yeah.
The Cape Range Peninsula, which is now on the World Heritage List, was supposed to be drilled for oil and was drilled as a test field for oil. The reef was used as a commercial turtle fishery. We had a whaling industry there. So in the space of two generations, we've turned that around from a place of extraction, like most of northwestern Australia, sadly,
mm-hmm.
To be a place of contemplation and study and ecotourism.
Mm.
So it just shows you what can happen in such a short space of time. And for young people, whether they like it or not, or we like it or not, they're going to have to change their culture and their polity in a very short space of time to rescue the planet. So what they need is information, they need good science, and they need a bit of inspiration, and they need a sense of opportunity that if they get good data and they find allies and they have enough solidarity, they can change policy, they can change the course of history and save our world.
Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate the work that you're doing in this space. And as I said, it's been a while since your last picture book. It's awesome to see you leaning into inspiring kids who are obviously at the front lines of the impacts of climate change. And I see especially this thread of inspiration through the book. I mean, it's breathtaking and beautiful. The illustrations by Cindy Lane are just stunning. And I'm wondering, where does wonder and beauty fit in your mind to how we communicate with kids about climate change?
I think it's vital, and I think it's something that we forget too easily. Us older folks tend to get all caught up in our own anxiety and our own grief. But we have to remember that the things that create opportunity are things like inspiration and wonder and excitement and celebration. You've got to have something to inspire you. You've got to have something to protect. You've got to have something to hope for.
Mm.
And I'm not in the business of creating false consolation or false hope. I just think that's cruel. But, Ningaloo is one place in Australia where you can look to and say, actually, this is a place where we got it right.
Mm.
We made hard decisions. We changed government policy. We changed culture. And we changed our own mindset so that this could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we need to do this on a broad scale in terms of climate. So, if you can engender a sense of wonder and how miraculous the world is, you're sort of investing don't encourage them that, in the sense that this is their home and their only home, how can we expect them to fight for it, you know?
Absolutely.
It's not, we've kind of fallen into this idea that we're encouraging young people to see the world as a kind of an asset, or even worse, as an accessory, you know, an add-on, a luxury. The air that we breathe, the soil that is under our feet, and the water we drink, this is the true economy. Everything else is a construct over the top of that, a financial construct. So I think wonder and joy and awe are really important. And they're important for old people, but, you know, I've got six grandkids, so I'm invested. I've got a lot of skin in the game myself, but I can see that what excites them is how amazing the world is. And they don't need our kind of tired nihilism. They need our childlike wonder. We need to share that with them. So with that combined with data, with knowledge, is really, really important, but also really potent, you know. And I think it's important to notice that, you know, in the climate space, it's the young people who are inspiring the old people, even if it's inspiring them to feel a bit ashamed of themselves.
Would you say that you're trying to communicate something that was missed in your education about nature and our place within it?
Yeah. I grew up in a world where we still thought the world belonged to us. And now I think we are conscious that we belong to the world. And, you know, for those of us who live on this continent, you know, we have slowly and very painfully been taught by First Peoples that we, you know, country doesn't belong to us, we belong to country, and we have obligations to it, you know. And when we take those obligations seriously, our lives are richer, and our future prospects are richer. So, you know, I grew up in a rich country with a kind of a poverty of outlook.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
You know, I think you know, we are among the poorest people in the world in terms of outlook, because of our strange kind of Manichaean ideas about the world, you know, this sort of dualism that we all inherited, and the idea that everything can be monetized, and something is only valuable if we can extract something from it, you know.
Well, Tim, I've got to say that despite it all, you are someone who's turned out to be a staunch and inspiring advocate for our living world, for the incredible landscapes and ecosystems that we have across this continent. So I respect that you've taken seriously that call from First Peoples to shift the mindset. And I also wanted to give a shout out to a recent win in particular relating to the Ningaloo region. Can you tell us a little about the win in relation to Exmouth Gulf?
Yeah, I mean, Ningaloo is made up of three vital ecosystems, and I always talk about, you know, Ningaloo is like an emu's foot, has three toes, and you can't take away one toe otherwise.
I love that image.
It falls over. You know, it's the emu is the totemic animal for the region, for the Biyungu people, and so we have Ningaloo Reef, which many people have heard of, Cape Range, which is the big peninsula in between, and Exmouth Gulf, which is you know, the world's largest intact arid zone estuary, with this, you know, massive intact mangrove forests. And the other two, you know, the reef and the range, have been given World Heritage status and have National Park and Marine Park status. Exmouth Gulf was supposed to be added to the World Heritage Register with
Sadly
the other two,
left out.
But it got carved out, you know, because of vested interests, and so it wasn't even a marine park. So we spent the last 10 years, you know, advocating for a marine park in Exmouth Gulf, and
well, we're talking about a crucial nursery area for humpback
whales,
among
we
other
call
things,
it,
aren't we?
We call it Ningaloo's Nursery. So this is where, you know, a lot of the fish species grow up in the mangroves. The dugongs all aggregate there. It's the world's most, you know, significant humpback whale resting area. So it's was great that the West Australian government earlier in the month committed to a marine park in the entirety of Exmouth Gulf, which is 2,600 square kilometres. Mm. And they committed to 30% sanctuary zone status, which is a great thing. And yeah, so I think there's a lot of... we have a lot of losses, and we, you know, you fight a lot of fights, and you lose a lot of fights in conservation. So you have to celebrate the wins.
Absolutely.
When you get them, and we're hoping nationally, we're in conversation with the national government about national heritage status for Exmouth Gulf, mm-hmm. and obviously, you know, our hope would be that soon after we would get. Get it added to the World Heritage List where it should be.
Well, thank you so much, Tim, for all of your advocacy for the Ningaloo and beyond, and congratulations on this most recent piece, this beautiful and important work.
Oh, thank you, comrade. It's nice to be able to have me on.
Author Tim Winton on celebrating wins and keeping up the fight to protect the places we love. You've been listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environmental Justice Program. I'm Mia Audrey. We've heard from Dr. Lyndon Ashcroft on what making the Climate Kids video series has taught her about climate communication, and from author Tim Winton about the Ningaloo as a place of hope and wonder in the long fight for change. You'll find links to the Climate Kids video series, as well as the Climate Superheroes tool Lyndon mentioned, and more information on Ningaloo, Australia's wild wonder, via the links in this episode's show notes at 3cr.org.au/earthmatters. Thanks for listening. That's all for now. But tune in next week for part two, featuring insights from environmental educators into climate conversations with young people. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting the program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR, NAM, Melbourne.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation, and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick, and check out Doin' Time for news, views, and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio, 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
The annual Melbourne Pacifica Festival is on again, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday, December the 6th at the playground end of Banjo Patterson Park in Lynbrook. Immerse yourself in the richness of Pacific Island culture with traditional dance, dynamic drumming, soulful harmonies, bands, guest artists, children's activities including rugby clinics, Pacifica arts and crafts, and yummy food. Lots of fun and activities for the whole family. Saturday, December the 6th in Lynbrook. Visit melbournepacificafestival.org. Melbourne Pacifica Festival is a 3CR supporter.
And even subtropical rainforests that don't usually burn were actually on fire.
We have the obligation to care for country.
So much forest burnt that around 3 billion animals are either killed or displaced.
The more we push back against the colonial apparatus, the more positive change we can have in terms of addressing climate change.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.